On the Therapy Dogs Australia podcast today, Sam and I are joined by Azaleen Williams, a counsellor, social worker and speaker who will almost always be accompanied by her therapy dog Zeta, a Hungarian Vishla. Azaleen goes into detail of how she brings out the best of Zeta's breed traits and personality for therapy work and meets Zeta's needs as a high-energy working dog. Let's get into it. All right. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Therapy Dogs Australia podcast. I'm Max, the social media manager for Therapy Dogs Australia, and we've got Sam King, the owner of Therapy Dogs Australia. How's it going, Sam?
I am going great and very excited for today. Thank you, Max.
It is a very exciting day. So we've got the pleasure of having Azaleen Williams on with us today. How are you, Azaleen?
I'm doing very well. Nice, cold, chilly winter's morning in Perth.
With your singlet on. And for those who are listening to this and not watching it on YouTube, we've got Zeta, the therapy dog, in the background on the armchair, looking like in the perfect position. Azaleen, do you want to introduce yourself a little to the listeners before we get started?
Thank you, Max. Yeah, so my name is Azaleen Williams. I'm a counsellor and social worker in private practice. Majority of my time I work with young people that either experienced domestic and family violence or child sexual abuse. And then I also go into schools and I do presentations, lived experience presentations on domestic and family violence, the issues around vaping, coercion, consent, exam stress, and so forth. So a majority of those things I've experienced myself as a young person. I've been through sexual abuse. I've ended up as an adult with emphysema because I started smoking and vaping many years ago, but I did quit, thank God to that. But yes, I've got a lot of lived experience in the field. And working with young people, I did realize when I started my private practice many years ago that sometimes there's a little bit of a struggle with, building rapport and things like that. And yes, so we'll get into that part of it. But later on, I decided to basically get a therapy dog to help me with that process. Zeta is always in my private practice. When I see teenagers in my private practice, I've got a very small little room here. When I stand up later, you'll get a bit of an idea what my setup looks like. I work from home, and then I'll go into schools. And if the situation is fit for her, then she also goes into schools with me to go and do presentations.
Fantastic. When did you do the course with Therapy Dogs?
So I ended my course end of last year. And my process was when I, just worked in my private practice, we've got two other dogs as well, Boston Terrier, about 5, and a miniature Dachshund. I think she's about 11 now. And I chocolate, that's the miniature Dachshund, into my private practice normally, just because she's such a cuddle dog. She's very different from other Dachshunds, that's very nappy. I used to just have her as a cuddle dog. And somebody, to hold or something to hold. But I realized with the young people that I work with, as she got older, it actually got a bit dangerous for her with her back and so forth. So my head to train a therapy dog, and what kept me back from that was just the fear of it's going to be so much work and, this needs to be this perfect dog. However, I then... started looking at your platforms and see what it was all about. And I decided to get a dog. So the job to get the dog or the right fit was actually my teenage daughter's responsibility. I said to her, I need a dog. I don't want too much hair shedding. I don't want too big of a size, but I want something that's fun, playful, and so forth. And she found this Vishla breed that I've never heard of, don't know anything about them. Started talking to my sister that's back in South Africa, and she actually said to me 6 months prior to that, she actually adopted a Vishla as an adult dog. So I started talking more to her about them, and she said, Azaleen, if you want this breed as a working dog, best breed ever. If you're not going to work this dog, it's going to destroy your household. So I then realized I think it's actually the best fit. So I ordered Zeta from the breeder in Tassie. I really wanted a male dog, a little bit bigger and so forth. And the more I spoke to people and the more I spoke to the breeder, everybody said to me that got dogs from breeders, leave it for the breeder. Tell the breeder what you want, get out to the breeder. And in the end, when she had her puppies and she, you know, looked at them for a couple of weeks, she came back to me and she said to me, Azaline, you're either going to love this or hate this, but I've got a female that I'm going to suggest for you as a therapy dog. I know you want a male, but this is my suggestion. I've got a male if you want one. And I decided to go with the breeder's choice. So I got Zeta, and obviously I had to go through the year process of, you know, puppy and house training and so forth. I love that. From the beginning, and that's things that I learned, you know, from your podcasts and other podcasts and so forth. I crate trained her. I had her on the leash constantly next to me. She was never, you know, just roaming the house. So she didn't have that opportunity to be naughty and, you know, make mistakes and things like that. And after that, I think I did the countdown on 10, 9, 8 as she got to 1. Can join the program, and that was me. So we finished end of last year.
I love that story, because I don't remember if you've already told me that, but for everyone listening, your initial obedience and manners score was really high for your first go, like your first assessment. So and your temperament assessment that Ariza did, like, just had glowing feedback. Like, and back then Ariza was like, you've got to get this lady in, like, and she's amazing. You've got to talk to her and do a podcast with her or something. And I was like, we'll see. We'll see how she goes, Ariza. Like, you know, just let anybody on this podcast, okay? So I was like, oh, because when you first graduate as well, like, because I got a couple, actually have a couple of people on my list that we're watching for, like, they seem like they might be superstars and you're on that list. And I'm like, we just gotta wait and see how she goes. And then we saw Max, that video.
Oh, the balloons. I think balloon you had play. Students in a circle. Yeah.
One of the best things I've ever seen. Like, just so cool.
Obsessed, absolutely obsessed. I watched that so many times.
So
that
was we'll just... have to, if you don't have it on your thing, we'll have to find it. Max, you can pull it up while we're having this chat. And I just want to say early on as well, and anyone who's listening to this podcast, this is probably a YouTube one. So if you want to swap to YouTube now, do that. But so just so you know, we were like, well, you know, we had a look, like, she's glowing feedback from the temperament assessor. The obedience and manners videos are fantastic, really high first score. And then, you know, we just want to give people a chance to get into their work role and see how things go and that sort of stuff. And then, yeah, you're just killing it every step of the way. So, so impressed. Well done.
Thanks, Sam. I really appreciate it. You know what? I think it's a combination of a lot of things. It's the combination of, I mean, just doing your program, there were so many things that I was afraid of. I was so scared of doing this program because I look at videos of dogs and I had that thing in my head. The dog needs to walk on my side. The dog needs to sit. And it's, you know, boom, 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 boom. And I was like, I love that. I love watching that. There's two dogs that I follow that's like that. And one is a police dog. And I sometimes look at that. I'm like, why are you not like that? And do you know what? That's not a therapy dog. But I didn't know that. I didn't know she can actually make mistakes. Mm-hmm. I'm in fear for our next assessment because working in our space at the moment, we don't use all of that specific, you know, sit and stay for long periods in time. But she picks it up really very, very quickly. And when I did my assessment and I started working with her, I actually realized that I had fears for the wrong reasons. you need to know your job. You need to do the stuff you guys, you know, teach. And that's it. You know, and then just keep on doing it. And you know, if it's a worker dog, let the dog work. But also, when it's time to rest, the dog needs to rest.
Yeah.
It's a journey, and it's probably like the best and most amazing things that I've ever done in my life.
Yeah, I'm so happy to hear that. That's so cool.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
I think that point there to take out for people who might be listening going, oh, okay, is like when we have to assess the dogs. We've said this before in other podcasts. We have to assess the dogs. We can't just have these rando dogs that don't do shit you say. Like we can't have that. The reason we can't have that is because going through the process of training your dog and working with your dog on those tasks, like your sit and your drop and your recall and that sort of stuff, that's how you build your relationship with your dog. That's, you need those things happening. You building your communication with your dog, and you're showing your dog that, like, hey man, just check in with me and I'll let you know what's got to go down. And then we actually do what's called training for abstinence. So we actually don't ask the dogs to do that much in their day-to-day life. But what we're really working on is being able to stop the dogs from doing something that we don't want them to do, because we're looking for calm liberty. So we want the dogs to be able to, and that's like, when I saw your video of that balloon game, I was like, this is exactly why we train the dogs the way that we do, is because guess what? You can go and have fun and be crazy and high energy and have this really fun game, and the kids are just going absolutely bananas for it. Dog's having the time of her life, because you know at any time you can stop that game. Like if there was a reason to stop the game, then we can stop the game. So all that stuff that we have to assess is because we need some kind of standard, we need some kind of assessment. But really what we're working on is getting that level of relationship with the dog, where we know that if I say, hey, this needs to be happening, this needs to change, you need to come here, this kind of thing, it's a safety issue, someone's upset, you know, something's happened and we need to get control of the situation pretty quickly, that you can do that with your dog because you've got this beautiful working relationship, which we can definitely see that with you and Zeta. No,
it's really important to understand that, because dogs do make mistakes. They do get a fright. I had just an example of what happened to me a while ago. I was at a school, and it's a mixed cultures in the school, and we did. I think that video is on her channel, her Instagram channel. The kids.
What's her handle for everyone?
I think I've changed it a while ago to make it.
Sorry, I am going to go back to your story. Sorry, I just got excited.
So her handle is Paw Prints with Zeta. Paw Prints with Zeta, and the name is just Zeta, the visual therapy dog. So what happened was with that was the kids were playing with her. Everything went well. We had an awesome time. Afterwards, I came and said hello to her. And like I said, it's different cultures and so forth. So we walked out, and one of the teachers wanted to talk to me, and I went and I sat in the office and I waited for her. And the chair that I was sitting at, my back was towards the chair and the door was behind me. And Zeta was sitting next to me. And one of the students, now this is year 12 students, the one student, very tall guy, quite biggish, barged into the door to come and say something to me. He wanted to come and say to me, he really appreciated my presentation. But she was sitting with her back towards the door when he opened the door, and she got a fright and she jumped up and turned around and she gave a bark. And I looked at her and I looked at him and I realized what the situation was. And I just said to her, it's okay, Zeta, sit down. And she went and she sat and she looked at him, and I could see she was not quite sure yet. And I said to him, just hold your hand out so she can just smell your hand. And he just slowly did that. And it was all okay. And I realized to myself, she got a fright. Mm. But again, you take it on yourself. And I got into the car and I'm like, what now? Does this mean, you know, this is now saying that she's going to bark at students? You know, you think of all these things. And I ran through the whole process to look again at what happened. I took it to schools again. It didn't happen again. But I think it's when a situation happens, you need to realize, is this a dangerous situation? And take my dog out of the equation or not. What I do realize now with Zeta, for instance, she doesn't want to go into primary schools. She doesn't like primary school kids. Mm. In primary school setup. In my private practice, one-on-one, young kids, she loves them. But I think it's the big noises, it's the high-pitched sounds, and she just doesn't like primary school.
Probably also the constant running.
Primary schools are the worst.
Happy with it.
Chaotic.
Chaos.
Yeah.
Chaos.
And I think that's where you need to, you know, if you start, like you said, learn how your dog operates and so forth, you know what's going to be good environments for them. And if you see that environment is not good for them, you take them out of that environment. I don't take it to primary schools anymore. So, yeah, it's that I've learned.
I'm writing notes while you're talking because you're saying all these cool things that I want to go back to. So just to touch on that point, how good is it when you can choose your environment so easily like that? Like being in private practice and being like the master of your own destiny is literally the best fit for therapy dog work because you can change what you're doing based off of what your dog enjoys and doesn't enjoy. And it's fine if she doesn't like primary schools. We just don't go there. But if you work, if you're like a primary school teacher, like, oh, no. And I think that happens to people. And, you know, they have to make the decision then. I think usually what happens is they get a different dog. We see that a lot. We see people train their first dog and they find out, like, what that dog's capable of. And then they have to go, like, okay, so now I need to get myself situations where we can do those things. But if that's not their, like, day-to-day job, then they buy another dog that's a different breed and a different background, and they're starting the training from the very beginning. They know what to do this time and that sort of stuff, and set themselves up and get themselves a dog that can will be more likely to handle their environment. But that's also, I love hearing when people go like, hey, like my dog doesn't really like that, so I don't do it. Because it's not like, oh, your dog can't do it. Like, oh, that's not, your dog's not good enough to do it or anything like that. It's actually my favorite thing to hear from handlers when they go, yeah, my dog doesn't like it, so we don't do it. It's awesome.
You can't force a dog at all, you know. Can't force a dog to do something they don't want to do. You just need to be extremely mindful. And I didn't realize how important that dog body language was. You know, when I did the program, up until I started working with Zayda, and I can see her body language. I can see when she's not very happy. It sometimes happens in the community. You know, somebody would walk past me and she would walk a circle away from them. She wants to move away. So, and you just listen to their body language.
Yeah. I love that. The other thing I wanted to go back to is we actually had someone, one of the teams, who also had, from memory, a really great first assessment, like awesome. And their dog got a fright at school, and now the dog doesn't want to go to school. Like she's held on to it. Like they'd only just kind of gotten in there as well, and something happened with a student, unrelated to the dog, but something happened with a student. And the other I think what would have tipped this situation over the edge is that the handler got a fright. So the handler was with some other students. The other students that they were with got a fright, the handler got a fright, and the dog got a fright based off of one other student's actions. And now the dog's showing some aversion to the environment. So we've got one of our dog trainers working with them on it and stuff like that. But I don't have any more details than that at the moment because it's recent. But it can happen that way. Like it can absolutely happen that way. And I think those kinds of situations are really hard for the handler. You can't really not get a fright if you get a fright. Like, you know, so, but the dog that finds it harder to recover.
Yeah. And I'm going to give you an example of Zayda, for instance, and I do believe it. When we talk about muscle memory and so forth, they've got those memories and they pick things up. So I normally, when I do presentations, I go into high schools and do the presentations. It's very seldom that I do primary school presentations. Although I don't I've never taken her to a presentation at primary school. So primary school visits for me is when I go and see kids at a primary school for counselling sessions. So what happened to her at this primary school was, and I want to mention this because I think it might be similar to this person that you're talking about as well. I went to see a one-on-one client at a primary school and everything was fine. And one of I think it was one or two times, the session was booked plus minus when it was break time. It was their primary school break. And that was where she got this front of, I just don't like primary school kids, literally, because that all just went for her. And something in her shift completely. And from there, I tried to take her back to the primary school. And it was, again, over a break time. Didn't want anything to do with it. Then I booked her session and I made sure it was not over a break period.
Yeah.
I stopped at school and I wanted to get her out of the car. Didn't want to move.
Really?
Did not want to get out of the car. She
That happened quite quickly, yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, well, I'm not going to force her. And I left her in the, at the car and I went into the office and I said, I'm just cancelling the session. Phoned my client. I said, I can't see your daughter at school anymore. I unfortunately had to make that change.
Yeah. Yeah.
From there, because I wasn't quite sure if it was just the memory of that specific primary school, I've tested that just stopping at other primary schools when it's break and there's kids running around. She doesn't want that. Doesn't want to get out of the car.
Yeah.
It's that. And I do believe it's that heartbeat noises. It's the mass, a lot of kids. She just can't handle it.
Yeah.
Where high school's different story. Doesn't matter if the kids are all over the place and it is break time or whatever. She's happy.
Yeah.
But she's got this thing for prom. And like I said, one-on-ones, happy with that.
Yeah.
The girl came to see me in my private practice after that. Happy with that. She loves it. I've got a great bond and so forth. But, yeah, it's...
We were learning on dog camp the other week more about this, single event learning stuff that can happen. And it's like when... And I think it's the same for humans. When you have a situation take place and it's highly emotional, there's a lot of emotional intensity in the situation, the neural pathway that develops when that happens is super strong. It's a really strong highway.
Yeah.
And then to get rid of it, to have the dog not feel that way in that situation, blah, blah, blah. You do your counter conditioning, right? So you do, you're like, okay, so now we're this far away from the school and we're giving you food and everything's fine and we're not worried about that stuff and blah, blah, blah. But it takes thousands of reps of counter conditioning to build your new neural highway because you're keeping them emotionally not activated when you're doing that. When you're doing a counter conditioning, you're keeping calm, you're keeping that underneath that threshold, which you're supposed to, but the learning that's taking place under the threshold, it's, you got to layer it and layer it and layer it and layer it 10 billion times, because that highway that was built when they had that emotional, highly emotional, I'm in danger is where it usually will come from. But in dogs, it can be other stuff as well. It can be that was the funnest thing that ever happened to me. As an example of that, there's a reel or TikTok or whatever that there's this person has this Labrador and it found a sandwich under the tree at the park one day. And that was just such a massive jackpot for this dog that every day that it goes to this park, it just checks under the tree, just in case today I could win the lottery again today. So
that makes me think of Dougie actually, because he was always really scared of bags, any bags, paper bags, plastic bags, anything shopping. And then one day I had bought him a toy, but I'd put the bag on the ground and the toy was in the bag and I'd gone off and forgotten that I'd actually got this toy. And he had found it and pulled this toy out and brought it to me. so over the moon. He was thrilled. And ever since then, every bag that's on the ground, he sticks his head he's straight in and hopes that there's a toy in there. Completely changed. Like, he's not afraid of bags anymore just from that one experience. So that makes perfect sense.
I love that. I also think it has to do with their sensitivity as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's just this breed, because she's the only, I mean, the Shavishla that I really know, but she's extremely sensitive. I even see with, when I'm out and, you know, the miniature sausage dog, she will sniff anything out. She loves sweets. So she will sniff anything out, which is normally in my daughter's dustbin. So if there's anything that she can sniff out, she will go and put it to pieces in the TV room. And I know if there's something like that, it was her. It's not one of the other dogs. to the house. As I walk into the house and I see Zayda, I can see in her body language, chocolate has done something. That's how sensitive she is. The whole body language is, I promise you it's not me, I promise you it's not me. And I just know. And I will go into the TV room and there will be a mess. And I know it's the sausage dog, but they are sensitive towards that. And it's not, you know, like that I'll scream on, the, you know, or go crazy. She's just very sensitive. It's, yeah. So, yeah, primary school is just not her thing and it suits me.
I think that breed, like though, any of these like breeds that are really in tune, like they've been bred for, like, I think are they a gun dog?
What type it's of gun dog?
Yeah, I think they're bred like a border collie. Like they're meant to have that like affinity with you because you're out working together hunting, and I think they've got a predisposition for really, really bonding with the owner and being quite sensitive to the owner, which is such an awesome thing. Like it can be really, really useful, but it's like everything we talk about in all the dogs. In some situations it's a blessing and in some it's a curse, you know? So I'm exactly the same with my border collie. Like he's sensitive as well. And he's everyone's favorite dog. Like everyone loves him because he's just so affectionate and beautiful and gentle and all those things and really, really loves people. But you know, he's the one that's like, I wouldn't take him to a primary school. Like he would be like, this seems like nonsense.
You know, it's interesting as well, Sam, about that sensitivity that I see with Zayda is she picks my clients' moves up. Clients, they will walk in, and depending on what their situation is, they will walk in, she will walk very slowly, and that's through the bank with that type of client. She would walk in, they would walk in, she will always wait here. She's normally on her pillow. I'll show her pillow for you in a bit, and she just stares at the door. So she knows if I bring her in here, we close the door, it's work day. She's very funny. I was like, oh, what are we doing here? When they walk in, that specific client, she's very soft and gentle and walk, and she'll go lie at their feet and she just feels on there's something going on for them. Then I've got other clients that walk in. She knows when something happened to them. Before that client starts telling me, she will, so for instance, it's a more bubbly type of client that's more normally a bit bubblier. She would be happy when they walk in. But if something major happened to that client, she feels that. Her personality changes. She will, one of my specific clients that I'll think of now, something happened to her a couple of weeks ago, and she went to sit and I know that something was a little bit off. And as she sat down, Zayda just slowly, very slowly climbed up, foot by foot by foot. When she got to her shoulders, she was standing with her feet on her shoulders, and she just put her head down. And she just lied like that. And I said to my client, did something happen this week? And she said, yes. And I said, Zayda feels that. And my client just went and she just hugged her. And the two of them was just sitting like this. Zayda was standing on her back feet and they were just sitting like this. And that was just amazing for me to see.
So beautiful.
Because with that specific client, she's a very playful client. Zaida normally will jump up on her and he'll give her a couple of wild licks. And,
yeah.
And then she will go and lie down when we've got our session. And this was just completely different. She knew when that client walked in, something's going on for her that day.
It was incredible.
I was sitting there, I was like, I wish I could film this. I just wanted to film this. It was beautiful to see.
That's so, so incredible. I also have those moments too, where I'm like, I wish I was allowed to film people's psychology sessions because my dogs or horses are like being really cool right now. Damn it. But that is so, so beautiful. I love hearing stories like that. And I believe it. Like, I believe in that because we hear that sort of stuff. I've been hearing that stuff for 10 years. Like, that people have got these, my dogs are a little bit, you know, I don't know what their story is. I was clued in they're a little bit less emotionally available. They are raised by me, so makes sense. But yeah, they are. It's such a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Very, very interesting.
My Brumbies are like that. Very special. While you're talking, I'm looking at because I'm thinking. I was looking at the Vishlas page on the American Kennel Club thing on this computer because I don't know that much about them. We've had a couple but I just think people might be listening to this and like googling where can I buy Vishla.
Tassie baby.
I got a quote here on the website. An expert on the breed tells us, if you don't have the time to encourage this breed's full use of its brain, you're wasting a good dog.
My biggest fear is when I go out and people stop us and say, what is this breed? And it's an amazing dog because she listens to me and we do things together and she's fun and so forth. And they're like, where can we get this dog? And I'm like, please don't get one. Just if you're not going to work this dog, don't get one.
Hmm.
She's a working dog. And this is why her balloon activity, why I love that with her. If it is, for instance, a day where this week I'm Thursday on my way to the hospital, so I know I'm getting injections in my back. So Thursday and Friday is going to be low days for me. I can't take her out for a run and so forth. I literally just have to blow a balloon up and do a bit of balloon play and it just gets that energy out. But you need to find that something that that works for them. Otherwise, yeah. I promise you, they're going to destroy everything. I'm on a Vishla page, and the damage these dogs can do in your home is massive.
Yeah.
With this one, she doesn't chew anything. She doesn't. I've got toys lying around all over in the house, but I've got a Boston Terrier, and the two of them are friends, so they play together. As soon as I open that door, she's crazy. My daughter can't understand that she's got two personalities because they see the wild side. They don't see her like this placid in this room.
My partner said exactly this to me the other day about Nala as well, actually. Sorry, keep going.
Or in a counseling session or when I take her to schools, they can't believe that when she's home and she's on the outside of the door, she's wild. They're like, she's so placid. She's so... And I'm like, she's got two different personalities. And you need to get that. You need to know how to work this dog because they're worker dogs.
It's probably also because she feels so comfortable knowing she's going to get everything she needs.
Yeah.
Like she can sort of have that time of rest because she's like, well, I'm going to be going crazy later. So no problem here.
The other thing is as well, I mean, it is an investment. It is a big financial
investment. Absolutely.
But we do travel quite a bit, and I've got two house sitters that, one that if I go away for, say, a week plus, she stays in the house. She goes to work and she does a day-to-day thing, but she lives in the house. She actually takes them out for walks and so forth. When I do weekend go-aways, I've got another girl in my area, and Wendy takes her out for walks. She's got another Vishla that she walks, so this one and the other Vishla normally go out and play in the park. It costs me money to be able to get those girls to look after my dogs when I'm not around. But you know what? It's 100% worth it because I come back. They've got no issues. They've got no, I'm not going to put them in a kennel. One of my dogs many years ago when I arrived in Australia, it was the biggest mistake I've ever done. I will never do that. So you need the finances to be able to do it. If you can't do it, I was, I think it was about a year and a half ago, I had a very big operation. I had half of my colon removed. I couldn't take Zeta for walks. And we came every day, she took her out, took her for walks, you know, things like that. It's, you need that. You need that support, you know, and so forth. So, yeah, there is definitely a financial situation as well. And people need to realize that. It's not just a dog.
And when they see Zeta and they're like, I want a dog just like that, they don't realize how much time has taken to get her to stage.
Some people might realize, but we're just letting you know, if you was listening to this going, I'm going to buy a Vishla off the country, just woo up for a sec, because I have to say the same thing. At clients at the clinic, Oliver does Wednesdays at the clinic with me, and he's just the most beautiful dog in the world. Like, he's never taken a bad photo. Like, he's just this wheaten, beautiful color, long-haired border collie. And he's just so beautiful and gentle and sweet and whatever. And people are always, it's whether it's my clients or it's usually the other clinicians' clients in the waiting room, because they've just had an interaction with him. And they're like, what type of dog is this? And it always means we want this type of dog. And so I always have a disclaimer where I'm like, oh, he's a border collie. But we live on a farm. I'm a dog trainer and he's 9 years old. So disclaimer. Don't think that I say to people, like, he's like, this isn't a normal border collie. This isn't what you would just buy from someone. This one, and he was bred for his show line bred. He wasn't working line bred, like, or sporting line bred. So all these little things along the way that they make a big difference in terms of people choosing their dogs. So yeah, I just do like to put these little disclaimers out there around, like, okay, but it's a lot of dog. Like, it's a lot of dog. And are you quite an active person? As in, obviously you've had all this health stuff, which sounds like it sucks, but because it says here in the internet, hang on a sec, blah, blah. All right. So it says these rugged but elegant athletes have been the pride of Hungarian sportsmen, and their popularity in America increases with each passing year. The Vishla is easily recognized by its sleek golden rust coat. Blah, 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 blah. Light-footed hunter's companion. So their long, silky ears frame a facial expression that is sensitive and loving around the house and intense when at work. That's what you've been noticing. As a hunter expected to work closely with humans, Vishlas form a tight bond with their owners and hate to be left alone, which is why people will be getting all their stuff chewed up. Athletes of many talents, Vishlas excel at various sports and activities. They are eager and graceful trotters of great stamina, making them ideal jogging or biking companions. Which is, I would get to that sentence in like a dog's like breed bio and then be like, oh, so not for me.
Walking, running, you know, active. That's the other thing as well. I've got an active life. I love bush walking. So I took her for training, snake awareness training as well. She actually needs to go and do her second training, I think, a year after you need to do it again. So yeah. She's did the snake awareness training. We do both bush walks. We boaties, so she loves swimming. So she swims a lot. I take her to the beach quite often. We're close to the beach. Even wintertime, she goes for a swim. She loves swimming. So I work her. If it's not practice work, she's got fun ways to release that energy.
Yeah.
And then you get this. Then she sleeps.
Yeah, yeah.
Loves her rest, and I'll give her that rest. So you need to get that balance right. Otherwise, yeah, can't overwork them, but you need to keep them busy. And their minds, I think a big thing is not the physical, you know, get tired. It's the mental stimulation. That's the big.
Yeah, well, because like I was saying before, my partner, when I tell him like what Nala's like at work, he's like, what? Because she's just such a psycho at home. So I was like getting her nice and fit for dog camp. And I took her back to the physio, and the physio was actually not that happy with her hips. She'd lost a bit of muscle tone over winter. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, got to get the dog fit again, you know, get her swimming more and stuff like that. And I made a real effort, like, to do more of her exercises and exercise in the water, but there are other exercises as well. She's so much more psycho. She's a lunatic. Like, she's just fit. Now she's fit. So she's just.
She can go even longer.
Exactly. Like, and she now, she's obsessed. If I get in the buggy, she's like, I'm getting in the buggy, like, for sure, because we're going somewhere and we're doing stuff. Absolutely. Because I was taking her in the buggy down. It's easier if I take her down in the buggy down to the dam, because sometimes the horses chase the dogs. They got dogs, wild dogs that go through at night, and I think they chase them. Chaos. Anyway, so now, like yesterday, like I'm taking for a swim, she'll swim. Like I'm throwing this thing out. This dam's huge. Like it's a half an acre size dam. I'm throwing this thing as far as I can out in the middle of the thing. She just keeps going and going and going. I've got to stop her because I'm like, I don't know if you are swallowing water or, you know, like I just don't want her to do it for hours. But she's a lunatic. Like she just keeps, and then I keep trying to get her out of the water. And I'm like, all right, let's go. And I put the toys in the back of the buggy so she can't. It's like, that's it. The game's over. She's not having it. She's trying to get in the back of the buggy. Like, she's trying to. And I'm like, mate, like, just you need to calm down. And she's like, oh, not calm down. I'm like, far out. And I got back up to the house because I had Sunny with me as well. I came back up to the house and my partner opened the gate for me. And he's like, this thing is just, because she jumps out and then of the buggy, and then she's trying to get the toys out of the buggy. And she's just running around in circles. And he's like, what? And I'm like, she's literally been swimming for like 45 minutes, like big on swims. And I was like, this is what happens when you get your dog fit. This is the problem. Is that she's like, she's a lunatic for like, when she gets really dry, water is her thing. Swimming is her thing. She gets really dry before it. The rest of the time, she's pretty good. Like now, like she's just asleep. But she is definitely a dog. So when I let her swim, I put chemicals in the pool yesterday. And so when I let her swim in the pool, I get sick of throwing the toy and I just give it to her. And she has to work out and she goes around the side of the pool and she drops it in herself. And then she goes back around the other side, jumps in and gets it. And then she gets back out and then she's got to walk around and she'll sort of see if I'm going to throw it. And I'll be like on the other side of the fence, like, you just do it. You know, you can keep playing in the pool. I've thrown it a few times. You can keep playing, but I'm not throwing it. But I reckon that tires her out way more. It's less swimming, but I reckon because she has to go through that process of like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'll just, should I drop it off the rocks or I'll climb through here and just the rocks on the side of the pool, one of those like things. But she like climbs over the rocks and then she drops it in. But it's working her brain. So then she still wants to do it all day, which I don't let her. But I can see the difference for sure, 100%. So you can't just get these dogs and put them like time to your bike. You know how people have them tied to their bikes and go for a bike ride and then be thinking they're worn out? Like, no. Their fitness training.
I won't be able to go on with the paddling. Sam, the combination between the water and obedience and so forth, interesting thing happened to me the other day as well. I took her for a walk in one of the little parks where there's a massive big pond. And I know there's always ducks on the pond. And the interesting thing is with her, I mean, like you say, she's a gunner dog. She's a hunting dog. So if people don't know what a gunner dog is, she's normally, they're the tripod. So they point with the 1 foot. And if the guys shoot the birds, they go and they retrieve. So they go and get the birds and they pick it up. So they've also got a very soft bite. They don't bite hard because they don't want to damage the birds. So when I got her, I was actually really scared with birds because I always thought in my head, you know, I think it's because I distrust her. And I feel really bad saying that. I didn't trust my dog because I thought, I need to be very careful of birds because, you know, she's going to chase every bird. No, she doesn't. She knows. I think it's bred into them. I can walk where there's parrots all over the grass. Through them, she will not chase the bird. Very, very interestingly. But long story short, what happened is we went to this park, we walked, and I know there's big ducks on the little pond. Doesn't bother me at all because she's used to the ducks, but I know as soon as we're going to get around the corner and she sees the water, she's going to run and just go for a little dip in the water. And that's no problem. She can do that because, you know, I take her off leash and she can then, it's her free time. She can do whatever she wants to do. So we were walking and she was off the leash and she was about 2.5 meters from me and walking, sniffing, just doing a thing. And I knew, you know, she's going to look up now, see the water, and she's going to bolt and take a dip in the water. And that's 100% okay. But I was also walking around and just looking. And the next moment when I looked up, there was a duck with baby ducklings. Just little things. Oh, and I didn't know if she's going to spot them because, you know, she's just going to go water, water, water. And she was sniffing, sniffing, sniffing. And as I saw them, I just looked at her and I said, Zeta, stop. And she stopped. And I said, sit. And she sat and she looked at the water and I knew she could see the ducks because now they're walking, she could see the water. And that's the most amazing part of having those commands. She was sitting. Yeah. I had time to not run, not make a scene, not shout, just walk up to her, leash her in or clip a leash in. And then I walked closer to just a distance where she can see them clearer, but not to give them a fright.
Yeah.
Then we walked and went to another part where she was able to get in the water. But that I absolutely loved about, you know, it was not something that was planned. I don't know how she's going to react. You know, is she going to go listen to my command if she sees water, or is water going to be the ruler today? You know, you never know. And yeah. She did a thing. She sat, she waited, and we had no problem. And that's the lovely thing about having a dog that is trained and so forth. Since she's not full of mischief, like you say, they dogs as well. But the important parts, they do what we say they need to do. And that's great.
And that's like you say, like I didn't trust my dog, but well, you shouldn't trust a young dog. Like, you shouldn't trust a puppy or an adolescent dog. Absolutely not. Like, no way. They've got to earn that trust. You've got to build that in your relationship. And the only way to do that is by putting your dog into situations where it's a controlled challenge, which is what all that obedience and manners stuff is. Like, it's a controlled challenge to see, like, okay, so where are we at with your ability to work under distraction and things like that? Where's your willingness and all that kind of thing? Because some dogs will just never have it. Like, some dogs will just won't, they don't have that bit ability. That's fine. Like, we just have different ways of working with those dogs and they don't get the freedoms that the other dogs have. So, you know, I love that sort of stuff. I think it's really, I think it's very, it's great for the dog because it means they get to have such a more fun, fulfilling, enriching lifestyle because we've built that trust in the relationship with them. And you know that you can it's all about keeping them safe and keeping everyone around them safe, including little ducklings.
I remember when Dougie was little, I had him on a long line straight away. So it gave him a lot of freedom, but I do sort of remember the moment where he could have developed the habit of chasing birds. Mm. He was interested in them as a puppy, naturally. And there was a few occasions, I think, where he was sort of eager to go up to them, but having that long line meant that I could give him the freedom to see how far he wanted to take it.
Mm.
And if he was going to take it any further, I could just stop him. And so I managed to catch that early, but it was one of those things where I remember kind of that moment going, oh yeah, like I can see that habit could have started within like a period.
That's what we're talking about just before, Max, about that neural pathway. Mm. Because you have that, it's like, well, that was so fun to chase those birds, and like they went all scattering and made noise and all that sort of stuff. So once you've got that, if you can prevent the pathway from developing, then it saves you a lot of hassle and having to then counter condition to be like, no, it's not self-reinforcing with the birds and blah, blah, blah.
Exactly. It's perfect. Now you can walk past birds and he's like, oh, hey. But he doesn't try and chase them. He might go and sniff them, but he's not going to chase them.
I taught my dogs to chase birds just for a little bit of balance if people are listening in the conversation. Because it's fun.
Do whatever you want with your dog. But it's great because I think it's fed into other things. Like we have so many kangaroos around us. So we see kangaroos all the time. And he doesn't ever, ever think to chase them. But I think that him learning I don't chase birds has also fed into I don't chase anything else as well. So, it's fun. It's cool.
Yeah. We're also allowed to chase wallabies here. So. Not if they're in our yard. If they're in the yard, it's a no-go. But if they're in the paddocks, we're allowed to run around and be silly about it. Because they stop. They stop when I tell them to stop. But also the bird chasing thing started back when I lived on a suburban block and we had magpies swooping our chickens.
Oh.
And so you'd hear the magpies call and then the chooks would be going, and I'd go, bird, and the dogs would run out and chase the magpies off the chickens because chickens would be out.
That's great.
Funny. It's a bit of balance. Just in case anyone was listening thinking, oh, my, it must be a really big deal if your dog chases birds.
Absolutely. No,
it's fine. Your dog can do whatever you want as long as you can stop it. Whatever you want your dog to do, it's like bite sports. Like you can teach your dog to bite people if you want. But you just got to be able to get them to stop it. So it's all these things that are like, I don't know about bite work for therapy dogs. I'm happy to be proven wrong about it, but I don't know if it's that good of an idea, but yeah. If anyone's listening, I don't know if that's a good idea, but yeah. Anyway, I don't know. Okay. So what can we look at? Well, have you got a video to show? What have you got to show us, Azaleen? We've talked about the dog.
A video, but we can do it a live one so you can see how she goes from sleeping to completely white.
0 to 10,000.
Yes.
0 to 10,000. Do you want to see that?
Yes, I would love
absolutely
to see that. Please.
So, the way that I don't lock the camera at all because I now need to get my stash out of this drawer.
Okay.
So I'm just going to move my screen a bit so you guys can still see what I do.
She's so deep right now. She's so cute.
She's so chilled out.
See me, but it's not about me. I want you to see her. So what happens when I take my sash out? Okay, first I'm just going to move my chair. Just give me one sec.
This is a good opportunity to go and watch this on YouTube if you're listening.
What do you call it? Pillow down there. That's normally her pillow. This is normally my chair where I sit, and that's where my clients normally sit. We'll get her from completely sleepy to on the go. Later, you want to play balloon?
Oh, face.
Again?
Oh, that face.
Oh my God, look at her.
So we're just going to do a little bit of it down so you can see her.
Oh, she's so ready to go.
Look at her sweet little face.
Now, this is very tempting for her because she doesn't want to sit. She wants to play. So why the hell must I sit now?
Just thinking if maybe I should buy a Vishla.
So her
mission. I love them.
The mission after the Boston Terrier's mission is to burst it. So, Sam,
that's her mission is to burst the balloon.
Her mission is just to play with it. The Boston Terrier's mission is to burst the balloon. So,
other dog, the Boston Terrier. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
We'll also see what I did the other day. A friend of mine invited me to her work organization, and there was a lady in a wheelchair. So Zayda is when the balloon drops, she will back off. She won't go for it if it's on the floor because she gives whoever is there the time to pick it up and play again. And I love this. I'm going to teach her. This is her instinct. This is what she taught herself. The balloon will drop. She will back off, give me time to pick it up. And I think that's great because You know, with little kids playing with her, I don't want her to bump them or, you know, grab the balloon from them and so forth. So it's actually really nice that she are able to do that. Now I'm going to lift my camera just a little bit so you can see her when she starts her jumping, because she jumps a bit. So
her face is cute. Oh, oh my gosh.
Look at her.
Winning of it, I'm going to just move it down so you can see her. The circle of her, she does that. She, that it's self-taught. This whole thing is self.
Wow.
She's like a seal.
She is. Look at her go.
Yeah.
Look at her. So funny.
Because it fell on the floor now.
She gets every single one of them.
She gets them. But we've got a bigger space at this school. We've got lots of obstacles here. Here we go. This way. Bring it this way to the end.
It's spinning.
Oh. I love the spin.
Look how fit she looks.
Awesome. I love it. Right, and I'm going to show you also when she's now done with this, she needs to start getting into a more relaxed state. Yeah. One more. Yeah.
Oh, I could watch this for so long. This is just so cute.
Look how shiny she is.
It's all done now. All done. Where am I going to put it for you?
Her ears inside out.
Yeah. So can you guys see it? Yeah, I'll just put it.
Yeah.
All done. Good girl. Good job. Good job, Sega. All done. Yeah.
Oh, so sweet.
Oh,
what a little sweetie. Hey, Deli.
About her, I just want to sit here so you can see the balloon, because she knows now she's done. The other thing about her is she's a lefty.
Oh.
Yeah. You want to try that? Can I sit? Oh, there we go.
Ah, she is a lefty.
I need to go read about that, because I don't know if that is part or the trained into them gunner dog thing. I'm not quite sure about that. But yeah, she's a lefty.
I'm Googling it.
Are you Googling it? Let me just move here then after I'm myself.
Half, according to a study carried out by scientists from the University of Manchester and published on the ResearchGate website, unlike what happens with humans are 90% right-handed, half of dogs are right-handed and the other half are lefties.
Wow.
There you go.
Yeah.
Thank you, Google. Yes. Bring it up, Jamie.
I picked up the lefty thing. I love that. Love that she's a lefty.
That's cute.
Now, what I wanted to show you about the balloon thing as well, she can go from that high energy to, okay, it's done now. It's not finished.
Yeah. Yeah. Really important. Very, very important to be able to get that level of arousal management for them, because otherwise you just can't do the balloon activity unless it's like always right at the end of someone's session or whatever, because if you can't calm the dog back down again, then they can become a distraction to somebody's session or your presentation or whatever it might be. Because I imagine, Azaleen, that's the kind of thing, if you're using it to build rapport, you want to do it at the beginning of your presentation. And so then you have to be able to calm the dog down to be able to get through your presentation. Otherwise you've got to deal with, okay, now the dog's all amped up.
Exactly. Yeah.
And they're a distraction.
Yeah. It all depend on the kids and my setup with my rooms as well. Sometimes I want to leave that for the students as a, you know, the ending part of it. So yeah. What I normally then do with her is I've got a specific, like, it's not really a blanket, it's a little carpet thing that I take with, and I normally put that in the middle of the screen. So the big screen, I'll put it there on the floor. Mm-hmm. So the kids can still see the screen, but they can see the dog as well. So it's not looking at the screen and where the dog, we actually want to look at the dog. So I'll put them and that's where I present from. And normally when I present, she just lies there on a little carpet. She'll stand up and she'll just walk around me and so forth and lie down again and so forth. And I leave her for that because I know she's not going to do something she's not supposed to do. And I don't feel that she needs to lie down for an hour. You know, it's she can stand up if she wants to. And she's just around me and she'll do one circle and she'll go and lie down again. Now she's on her mat. So that's normally where she lies when we wait for clients.
Yes, I agree with that. I think if it's not a problem, it's not a problem. You know, that's the kind of thing that, like, that's what we mean when we say, like, calm, liberty, and training the dogs for, like, you can make choices, all sorts of choices. Do whatever you want. Just don't do that. Just don't do that. And just don't do that. And that's fine.
Students and go and whatever. But if she wants to stand up a little bit, if she wants to walk around me and go lie down again, happy with that. She doesn't take attention of anything. And then what I would do then is just to end the session, I'll go, okay, we're going to play balloon. I would normally have a balloon in my pocket. And as soon as I take it out, she goes from that to just completely away. I love it. And what I would normally then do, like I show in my videos, I'll let the kids either stand in a circle, just depending on what the setup is. Are they in a circle? Zeta will be in the middle. And then, you know, they will shoot the balloon and to her in the middle, and she will shoot it to the people on the outside. Or what I do, they'll sit in the row in the audience, and then we'll start this side, give the balloon to the first person, and she bumps it, you know, they throw it and bump and throw, and we go to the end of the line and we'll start on that side again. The kids absolutely, the students love it. I mean, the teachers are in between, they love it. Everybody just loves it. And this came from a birthday party. I had a birthday party. I blew a balloon up. One balloon started, you know, just, it was not one of those that went up in the air. It was just normal balloons. And she started bouncing it around. So it literally, this whole thing was self-taught. Not even think
the best.
That's amazing. Because also it means it's so reinforcing for her.
My suggestion would be that people try that with their dogs. What I love about that is she, every now and again, because you're up, you probably might have seen what she does. So she does open her mouth and then she closes it, and it's the close, but it's normally with her lips that she closes it. But she's got very long fangs. So every now and again, a fang will hit it and it will burst. It doesn't give her a fright to not do it again. She's so used to balloons popping that it's just like, yeah, I did it, but yeah. It's she normally, her playtime with a balloon before it gets popped is about, I would say, about 4 to 5 minutes. And then I'll just blow up another one and we'll go again. But one of her favorite things to do.
I love it. I love that. And I think it's really cool. Like you say, like, she's got this, like, little hidden talent that she developed. And I'm sure people are listening going, like, oh, that's kind of like how my dog does this thing. And I think uncovering your dog's hidden talent and figuring out what that is and then trying to find ways to incorporate that so that it's useful in people's sessions as well is what it's all about. So I really, really appreciate that you're sharing that with us, because I'm hoping it's getting people's, like, brains ticking over and going, like, oh, so I wonder what is it that my dog's just, like, a natural at? Like, what it's, like, naturally taken their interest, and how can I, transfer that skill into something that works in my context for my dog and my client group and things like that. So I love it. Nala's is swimming, so it's not that easy for me to transfer that one, apart from I do see clients at the house, but she's got a few other little quirky little things that she likes to do as well that have been useful too.
And that's good, because I think it is just using that and see what your dog can do and try to incorporate that. In counseling sessions, what I would normally do is at the end of the session, that last, and not all my sessions, it depends on how the sessions go, but maybe that last 4 minutes or 5 minutes, we're like, okay, we've done everything we needed to do now. So do you guys want to play a balloon? Do you want to play a balloon with her? And then my clients will have, do what I did with it. And I love that. It's just ending my session. So I would normally not start my counseling sessions in this way. That's normally a ending session. And they love that because it's just that little bit of interaction. One of the other things that I started teaching her now to do is because she fetches and carries, she retrieves, she go and get balls and so forth. When I do a lot of art therapy and so forth with my clients. So when I do art therapy and I start packing stuff out that we're going to use, I'll call Zayda and I'll give it to her. So she'll take it and I'll say to the client, and she'll turn around and give it to the client. But she does have her little, I love walking around in a circle and become very funny because the client would want to take it and then she'll just turn around and she's like, try to get it. It's just part of the quirkiness that she's got. So yeah, it's just teaching them that little bits of extra.
I love that though, because it's funny. Like, it's fun and it's funny and it's a bit of a game, and we just know there's so much that we can access through play for humans. Like, it's, getting playful again. That's something that we need to do even with our adult clients. So I love when the dogs bring that playfulness back and, give us a really like a reasonable portal to access play for that client group, or, whether it's adults or people that are just a bit guarded or whatever. Like, I really love that the dogs can give us opportunities for that, because it is really important.
Sam, it is really important. And just to what you just said there, I was thinking of another client I had, really bit of a difficult situation. Mum really wanted just somebody to see him. He's one of those types, he doesn't want to get counseling, doesn't want to go to a counselor. She went in the morning just to go see somebody. He was in quite a bit of a bad state. Walked into my office, very flat, didn't want to talk, didn't want anything. And as he walked in, and my thing with my clients as well is I always say to people, I work with a dog in my therapy room. So, if you're not a dog person, then I might not be the right fit for you. Mm-hmm. However, with this specific boy, I didn't have so much, because it was a very spur of the moment, mum phone, can I please bring him in right now? Luckily, I had a gap. And he walked in, as he walked in, and said, I don't like dogs. That was his first words. And I said, that's fine. I can either take out art or she can just lie there. And she felt he didn't want anything. He's just lying there. And he said, no, she's fine there, but I don't like dogs. And I'm not going to touch her. And I'm like, that's fine. You don't have to touch her. In any case, and I started taking something out that I wanted to show him, and I asked Zayda to give it to him. And it made a little bit of a smile. And I said, can I show you something about dogs? Do you know dogs at all? And he said, no, not really. I didn't grow up with dogs. And I realized where this comes from, why he doesn't like dogs. Mm. And I said, can I show you something that she can do? And I thought, I'm going to use this just as a bit of an icebreaker. So I did the balloon thing. By the end of the session, he was cuddling Zayda and he was all over her and so forth. A lot of times people just don't know animals. Yeah. And that was a really good icebreaker for me, because he loved seeing her play with a balloon. He started laughing and it was just an icebreaker. Now, under normal circumstances, I will never push anybody to do something they don't want to do or be involved in doing. Like I said, I work with a dog in my therapy room.
Yeah.
If I'm not the right fit. And I say that to clients. So all my clients love animals. that was a different situation. But even that difficult situation just showed me that it can, a dog can make such a difference, even for the person that doesn't like dogs, doesn't want to touch a dog. It makes a difference.
But I reckon that I totally agree. And I reckon that way that that client responded, like we see, I've seen stuff like that a heap of times too. But I think it's the oxytocin, like it's the laughter and the way that the vibe of the room just changes. Cause not only is he laughing at the dog, but you're laughing at the dog too. And so now we're all laughing at the same thing. And it just seems to have this real rapport establishing kind of.
Got something in common here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And the room is full of laughter. And so I think that gives us just a really good starting place, even though it might sound like, because I actually had a client like this last week too, that was like rang up on the day and I had a gap. This young person had to be booked into today for similar reason. And it's like, I don't know, like you don't know anything about him. You don't know anything about him, just that a parent's freaking out and is like, so I need a psychologist today. And so, like, okay, whatever, you know, like, all right. So similar thing, but it's like that to establish rapport quickly in that circumstance is really freaking important. Like we're in a crisis, like we're not a crisis center, and I'm sure neither are you, but you know, someone rings up, we got a gap, like, all right, bring them in, we'll have a look. You know, it's going to take 3 weeks to see the GP anyway, so the hospital's going to send them home, so let's have a look. So to be able to build rapport quickly in that kind of scenario is important, because I need to do a proper risk assessment and things like that as well. And I need to get into this kid's head, you know, and we've got 15 minutes. So let's have a look. And, you know, they come in and to be able to get to that point of like, we're having a laugh and the dog's cute and you've had someone to pat and cuddle and whatever, and you like the dog, so now you like me, and you know, all that sort of, a little bit of modeling happens with, you know, me interacting with the dog and stuff like that. And our whole clinic is just like, there's dogs, you know, like, so there's dogs in the waiting room, you know, because all of our appointments, all of our clinicians' appointments start to finish at the same time, which is ludicrous that it's like that these days with all these dogs in the waiting room, which is tiny. But yeah, anyway, it's funny. So we're like, you know, it's just such a vibe. Like, and what happens in the waiting room too is like, instead of sitting out there like, oh, I don't want to be here, I just want to, like, you know, that just angsty teenagers, how they are. Parents dragged them in. But they're getting to see, like, and there might be, like, a little kid in the waiting room who's just, like, losing their mind over the fact that there's these dogs here and that sort of stuff. And then Olive will come up and pour at them to give them a pat and look straight in their eyes, and they just feel special. And instead of sitting out there, you know, being all angry and salty about being dragged in here because they're, you know, at risk, the barriers are starting to get broken down there anyway. And the social lubricant effect that I see in our waiting room, it just makes it so much less like we're all sitting here because there's something wrong with us and we're getting dragged into these rooms with these people that are going to tell us how to live our lives, and it's, you know, like that kind of thing. Because the dogs are out there just causing a ruckus, and we're out there, and I'm always talking to the other clinicians, their clients, I'm always talking to their parents and their client. Like, our clinic is, has got this like major crossover where everyone that comes to the clinic knows all of the clinicians and knows all of our dogs and all that sort of thing. It's a real community feel. Like, it's just real, like, you know, and we run our kids groups. When we run our kids groups, we've got all of our clinicians in the group. So we also get to know these kids as well. So it'll be like Callum's client in the waiting room, and I'll be like, Luke, you know, like, because I know him from groups, you know. So, and the, but then the kids are talking to each other about the dogs, because there's always going to be some veteran kid that's been with us for like 5 years. Like, that's Oliver. that's actually my therapist's dog. So, you know, which dog are you seeing? Oh, yeah, I know Charlie. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I've had groups with Charlie. So, yeah, yeah.
You see, now that, I think that's the point where you guys have got, your dogs are probably much happier than mine, because Zaid, I guess to your point where if I go through a week where I didn't book a lot, because my private practice is quite small, I do more school presentations and things like that these days than you know, seeing clients. So I would say I see about 3-7 clients a week. And also I need to say I see clients from 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock. So my time limit, it's after school. It's that little window period. But then I get weeks where I have got things to do or my trips are quite far, then I just don't see clients. I just don't put clients into my private practice. And then Zaida feels that because she needs clients. That she gets fed up with her household, me, my husband, my daughter, and the other dog. She wants clients. So the best place I take her to then to get that little bit of a boost is Bunnings. I love Bunnings. Bunnings. Because there's always something in somebody in Bunnings that we pop into and they say, oh, you just made my day. And then we just stop. Of a conversation and so on. So Bunnings is the most amazing place for me to, I literally go into Bunnings without a mission, without, I take her to Bunnings so she can get her people's kick. That's
so funny. Do you then buy like 5 million things from Bunnings? Because that's what I do.
I try to leave everything that I can't
go in there. No.
That's me in Bunnings. I love Bunnings. But yeah, I tend to then just make it a Zaida day and we're just going to spread some love in Bunnings. And that's what we do. We just go for a walk. And that's also actually where I practice in between a lot of our behavior stuff, like the sit and so forth. You know, I let her sit and then I walk the row and so forth. And yeah, they know us very well at my local Bunnings.
So you can also take yourself on a breakfast date or a lunch date with your dog and you don't feel like a loser. So that's a life hack as well. So I'll take Nala out for a breakfast date and I'll be like, oh, I just have to, like, it's obviously it's for Nala's enrichment because similar thing. Like she's just really needing some outside, she's needing some time out to go and look at things and, you know, be stimulated. So we have to go to the coffee club. That's the only it's part of the job.
Tough life.
Very tough life.
I have to show everyone this picture. So sorry if you guys aren't watching on YouTube. And also I'm just holding my phone up. Can you see this picture?
Oh, is that Kiki?
I finally got Kiki back in the car, Max.
Huge.
Kiki, massive. I would actually have to do an episode with you on how everything I had to do to get this dog back in the car. I nearly cried. She got in the car. Anyway, that's my big LGD. So she's 6.5 months and 46.7 kilos in that picture, which I know because I was able to get her in the car. No, it's ridiculous. I was able to get her in the car. After all this car sickness stuff, if you've been listening to the podcast, you'll know about it. And got her into Pet Barn, taught her to get up on the scale. Because you can't just make this dog do stuff. It's massive. She's too big. Like you can't just pick her up and put her in the car. And you can't just put her on the scales. Like I have to train her to do everything now at this size. Anyway, just what you were saying, Azaleen, made me think. So that couple, so obviously I had to take Kiki to the coffee club for training at breakfast time because they have this eggs benedict that I really like, so and I actually had to force my partner to come with me because I don't trust myself to handle this dog out in public because she's massive. She hasn't been out anywhere in months. Anyway, so I'm sitting at the table, right? And I'm just beside myself with like, I can't believe the progress that we've had this morning. Like I got her to jump in the car. I've taken her for a walk through past all the shops. She's going okay. She's only 6.5 months old. So she's still a puppy and she's massive. So you think about your little 6 month old puppy and how they're behaving and she's 50 kilos. So I'm like, okay, like I get her into Pet Barn and weigh her and I'm like, oh, okay, this is going okay. Like I think we can do the coffee club thing. Let's go. So, because I took her there when she was a baby. Anyway, so she's asleep next to the table. And this guy that was in the picture, like, he sits at the next table or whatever, and I'd sent my partner into Woolies. Like, we'd had our breakfast and I sent him into Woolies to get some stuff that we needed because I had to obviously stay with the dog. So his wife joins him at the table. So when she sits down, she just takes one look at this dog, and Kiki like wakes up and looks at her, and I'm like, she's going to want a pat. Like, she's a big softy, this dog. And the lady starts talking to Kiki, and I'm like, I can't hold her back. Like, she's getting...
this is happening.
You're going to have to pat her. So I'm like, do you mind if she says hello? Like, because she's up, like, she's going. And I'm like, and the guy goes, this is Kangal. And I was like, yes, this is Kangal. It's just what these dogs are called in Turkey. So in they're named Kangal. It's after a certain place. That's how those dogs are named over there. It's like the place that they come from. But everywhere out of Turkey, they sort of just get lumped together and they get called Anatolian Shepherds. So he's like, this Kangal? And I'm like, yes, this Kangal. And he's like, this Turkish. And I'm like, yeah. Yeah. And he's like, we're Turkish. And I was like, yeah, cool. And so they were stoked to see like one of their, like, it's like us seeing like a Kelpie in America, you know, like, it's like, they were just so happy to see her. But I swear she knew, like, she'd been able to, you know, cruise around, and she was like, look, I swear she knew. And it just made these people's day that they got to see a Kangal. They're both Turkish, and they were just and this lady is like hugging her, like, got her whole head just real, like, snuck. I said, I didn't take a photo of that because I hadn't asked them to take a photo yet, but it was really cute. That's what, yeah, made me think of that when you said just making people's day at Bunnings.
Beautiful.
Definitely feel it. I bumped into a guy from Hungary once that also, and he was so freaking and happy to see a Vishla. And
yeah,
it's people's day. And so I absolutely love going to Bunnings and just walk around with her and, you know, get her out and about.
But now, and I think
busy, high energy Vishlas, a little bit of balloon, and she's like, okay, I'll go again.
So this is what the guy that Pep at the coffee club, he was saying to me, so because this is their dog, right? So he's like, this is a working dog. And I was like, yeah, I know, like, we live on a farm. And he's like, this, they need a job, or it's not good, you know. Because I could sense he was like
concerned.
Why have you just got this dog? You know, this isn't just a dog. This is our dog, and it's for a purpose, and it's meant to be doing whatever. So I pulled up a picture of her with her goats on my phone, and he was stoked. Like, he was like, yes, this is very good. Like, I was like, yeah, she chases him around, but, you know, she's a bit naughty, but, you know, not the way we're working on it.
But that's amazing, and that's what you say. Yeah, they've got their little quirkiness, and they've got their little things, and they make people happy. But if it's working dogs, we need to work them, and it takes a lot of time, and it takes a lot of energy, and a lot of commitment. It's just one of those things. So,
man, it's so much work to train a young dog. Like, it is so much work, and that guy, like, it sounds like, you know, you would have the same reaction meeting someone from Hungary, like, because they will tell you, like, this is a working dog. Like, that's what this dog is. And then when you're able to go back and say, yeah, and this is how I work the dog, and it makes them happy that you're doing the right thing by their dog. You know, they feel like this is their dog. Like, it's, and so when you are meeting the breeds, you're fulfilling them. You're meeting, satiating their needs, and you're working the dogs in the way that they're supposed to be worked, or you're finding ways to work the dog that can compensate for that sort of thing. It just made him so happy. And I bet that guy that you met as well, like, would be so happy to know that, no, we didn't just buy your, like, nation's dog and then put it in my backyard and then, like, complain about it. Like, Vishlas are no good, or Kangals are no good, but that would be so frustrating. Like when people get cattle dogs, Australian cattle dogs, and they're like, oh, they're out of control and they're reactive and they're this and that, rah, rah. It's like, well, how are they on the cattle? No, I don't have any cattle. Oh, yeah, because they were bred to be on the cattle. So if you don't have cattle, you'll have to, and that's fine. You don't have cattle. You've got to find another way to fulfill the dog's needs, working needs. Being a therapy dog is one way that we can do that, but I don't think it's the only way unless you've got either a low drive kind of breed or a breed where the drive has been bred down a bit in them, because the therapy dog work is like, it is enriching. And like you've been talking about, Azaleen, like they, Nala's the same, like if she hasn't had clients or like the dogs, then when I have clients to the farm, the dogs are inside and it's like the kids choose, you know, where, what animal. Dogs are pissed if they're like, bring these kids. And I like some kids, I'm like, oh, do you want to say hi to the dogs? Because like the dogs have been skipped for the last two appointments. And I'm like, we better get these dogs some attention. They're going to be very upset. But yeah, like it's a form of enrichment for them and it is a form of stimulation for them. But I don't think that therapy dog work alone would have ever been enough for my border collie. And I don't think therapy dog work alone would ever be enough for a Vishla. I think you're going to have to find these other ways to like fulfill them.
And it's that's how it is. I think it's a couple of things that you need to look at. You need to specifically, if it is you want to use it as a therapy dog, look at your breed and look at your personality as well, what you do. High energy dog for me works because my life is high energy. Like I always say, I'm definitely a undiagnosed ADHD person for sure. And Vishlas work for me because I need to get rid of my own energy and we go and bushwalk and we do all kinds of fun stuff I can't have a low energy dog. That for me, for my personality, that would just not work. Yeah. But you need to find the right match dog for your personality, I think, personally. And then you, need to work towards that.
Yeah.
If I look at Zayda as a therapy dog, if I look at other therapy dogs that I see online, she's not a typical therapy dog because she is so high energy and so forth. But the way I work with her and what I do with her and for her to have that balance between I'm working, I need to be calm and content, and I can go wild. You need to just have that balance. I've even got some people on the Vishla site groups that I follow that say to me, I can't believe your dog's a therapy dog. My dog would never be able to be a therapy dog. But what I want to say to those people is your dog can be a therapy dog, but you need to put the time in. You need to train, and start with these type of dogs as young as possible.
Yeah.
Otherwise, yeah, it's definitely not going to work. Definitely not.
Yeah. And there's heaps of breeds like that. So, yeah, lots and lots of work, guys. But like the payoff, if the dog is right for the job, the payoff is massive.
Definitely. Best thing I've ever done. We are planning to go and do a bit of traveling, not next year, but the year after. We want to go and do a bit of sailing. So I'm going to start doing a bit of more online work. And I will block certain times out that I will be in Australia to come and present my programs in school. So I'll block times out all four schools. And then move my counselling business a little bit more online. We weren't going to sell for about a year or two. And my big thing was, what do I do with Zayda in the sense of working? She still wants to work because she's not saying yes. She's going with me. She's travelling to Europe with me. So she's going to Europe. Yeah, our plan is to go to Europe.
Exciting.
For a bit. We would really like to do, if everything works out well, do the crossing to America and then go and spend some time in the Bahamas. So this will be a 3-4 year plan.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that's the plan. My husband decided to do an early retirement. So I can't when he retires. I don't want to. I need to still work. So I'll do online counseling and then do my like I said, block times out for schools. However, the question for me is then, but what do I do with Zayda? And my thing is I'm going to be in other countries for periods of time. There is organization, there's youth organizations, and I will very quickly and very soon link up with those organizations and go and do a bit of, you know, training or, you know, whatever that is. But I will still keep her connected to that work life. She might just do it in Italy.
Imagine that. I can't wait to see that would be so cool to see her, you know, cruising around all these different countries.
Going international.
Yes, that's definitely
going. Get us some international clients, Azaline.
My life is at the moment, I laugh because my life is in a spreadsheet at the moment. I said to my husband the other day, I need to book times out for next year and I don't know what is open or whatnot. And he said, there's your spreadsheet. You can have all that time, but these are the traveling times. So if everything works out and our house can do it and we, you know, have no big obstacles, we are going to travel Europe and America for a while. Wow. I made the decision to take her with. So that in itself is going to cost me quite a bit of money. But, yeah, so... under your flag, you will have an international therapy dog, traveling in therapy dog as well.
That's wild. Wild, I say.
Wild.
How exciting. All right, we're going to wrap it up, but I wanted to go back over that Instagram handle if anyone didn't catch it at the beginning. So it's @poor_prince_with_Zayda, Zayda. There's some pretty cute stuff on there, guys. So... exactly. Jump on, there you go, Zayda. Or if you put Zayda, the Vishla therapy dog, put that in your search. Zayda, Z-A-Y-D-A. And then you can follow along with what Azaline and Zayda are up to. You might get some ideas for that you can steal from her
Azaline,
content.
You've also you've got your own Instagram as well. Do you want to...
Yes, my stuff is just under Azaline Williams, but I just look nice. It's actually disgusting. She's got more followers than I do.
just swap your account names over. Just steal all her followers.
Yeah, so my stuff is just under Azaline Williams on all social platforms. So it would be lovely to connect you with people.
Yeah, if anybody wants to connect with Azaline, go and hassle her and ask her some questions about Vishlas and, yeah, the work she does and all these cool things.
Oh, maybe we'll pop by and you can have a little Vishla cuddle or whatever.
Oh, beautiful. That would be so nice.
Perfect. Thank you so much for joining us, Azaline and Zayda, today and sharing all of your stories with us and encouraging people to spend the time on their dogs and really understand your dogs, and then you're really reaping the benefits, not only for yourself and Zayda, but for all of your clients and all these kids in these schools as well. It's awesome. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
I just also, from our side to you guys, again, it's hard work. Absolutely the best thing I have done. And if anybody is like me starting the program and they go, oh, I can't do this, there was so many times where I was like, oh, this is going to be too difficult, this is going to be too I've just kept on listening to you, Sam, that says it will all fall in place. So just pop all those I can't believes, go for your why, and just do it. You guys are amazing. It's absolutely the best thing I've ever done. So, yeah, hats off to you and your organization. Amazing.
Thank you. And that is great advice for everybody as well, because I know it's a stressful journey. So hang in there, guys.
Let's do it.
We're here to help.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you're interested in studying with Therapy Dogs Australia or you have a few more questions before deciding, please get in touch with us by emailing courses@therapydog.com.au or visiting our website at www.therapydog.com.au for more information and FAQs.